I chat to Tony Gosling about why the Bristol coroner has been suspended. It's for 14 or 15 months now. We also hear from Michael Jackson, who's been dead for nearly a year now. This is a recording of him talking about corruption in the music industry and Mariah Carey. Eagle-eared listeners with a long memory will remember us talking about the Fisherman's Mission a very long time ago. A chap named Tim Moat came in, who is the regional organiser of the charity. And we hear another story about the Fisherman's Mission from Tim. We've also got Jeff Sparks doing the What's On guide and some tunes to pass the time. Well, I'd like to hand over now to Tony Gosling. Hello.
Hi, John.
So the Bristol coroner has been suspended. Why is this significant news?
Well, it's not really news because it happened around about 14, 15 months ago. It's just that it's really extraordinary that, first of all, that this has gone on for such a long time. You imagine if you were in your job and then suspended for 15 months, it would be a little bit strange for you. And also that there's been absolutely no explanation as to why he has been suspended. There are all sorts of rumours flying around, but no official word anywhere.
Right.
The responsibilities of our coroner are to hold inquests into all suspicious deaths in Bristol, including any where negligence could be a factor. And it's actually very difficult to get a coroner suspended or sacked because it's historically been a job with a lot of pressure on it. And it's possible, you know, if there are things like assassinations going on, that the coroner will actually be removed. At least that's what's happened in the past, which is why he's got such a secure job and why this is such a strange state of affairs. His name's Paul Forrest, and he was removed from his post and suspended on full pay by Bristol City Council's chief executive Jan Ormeroyd 14 months ago. The reasons for his suspension have not been made officially clear at all, but are thought to relate to Mr. Forrest speaking out publicly about the enormous inquest backlog, with corpses piling up literally at a temporary site at Southmead Hospital, waiting for the part privatised mortuary at Flaxbourton to be ready. Several years ago, Bristol City Council sold our city centre coroner's court to the Lakota nightclub next door. A new Bristol coroner's court opened shortly after the previous one closed, in a small and inaccessible refurbished police station outside Bristol near Flaxbourton. And incidentally, there is no signposting to it from Flaxbourton Village at all. And inadequate mortuary facilities, certainly up until recently, and also no very little public transport facilities for anyone that wanted to get to an inquest to find the place.
Right.
So now the new mortuary has finally been opened, and one of the most well-publicised inquests recently held there was where the rotting corpse of a man was left undiscovered in a council flat for nearly a decade, despite city council official who went in to check the flat not noticing the corpse. Anyway, back to the suspended Bristol coroner Paul Forrest, because the decision over the coroner's future is in the hands of something called the Office for Judicial Complaints in London. The council has asked the Office for Judicial Complaints to conclude their review as soon as possible in the interests of all concerned. But 14 months and £100,000 on and counting of local taxpayers' money later, the process appears no nearer a conclusion. Now, I spoke to Rachel Collins at the Office for Judicial Complaints a couple of weeks ago and asked her several questions. Unfortunately, she wasn't able to answer a single one of them. This is I'll just go through some of the questions
she couldn't answer because of confidentiality or...
Well, this is what they say. But I think, you know, after 14 months, at least the public, the taxpayers of Bristol, deserve at least an answer to one of them. So anyway, the questions are as follows. How many complaints are there against Mr. Forrest? What are the complaints? Who made the complaints? Were any of the complainants directly involved in an inquest themselves? If so, which inquest? Were any of the complaints related to Mr. Forrest speaking out about the very recent, very long delays Bristol inquests taking place and inadequate mortuary facilities? Is Mr. Forrest the first coroner in the UK to be investigated by this Judicial Complaints Office? Are any of the complaints connected with the privatisation of Bristol's coroner's mortuary services? Which High Court judge is overseeing the process? Who is reviewing the case? Who is actually on the reviewing body? How long do complaints like this normally take? How long is this review expected to take? And this process has taken well over a year so far, so are there any constraints on how long Office of Judicial Complaints procedures are allowed to take to review a complaint?
And she refused to answer any of those questions.
And also, I've also asked her, will the review be made public? And that wouldn't be any... there was no answer to that question either. Neither was there an answer to the final question, which was, how can the public be confident in the result when the Office for Judicial Complaints review process is so secret? Well, Rachel Collins at the Office for Judicial Complaints, so far didn't answer any of those questions, but she did send me an anonymous statement. Following allegations regarding a number of financial and mismanagement issues, the Lord Chief Justice and Lord Chancellor decided in March 2009 that Mr. Forrest should be suspended pending the outcome of the investigation by the Office for Judicial Complaints.
Okay, so it appears that he may have behaved in some sort of misconduct manner or engaged in something possibly.
Yes, I mean, but they're not saying anything about what it might be, and they haven't for the last 14, 15 months. But anyway, that statement continues. The Lord Chief Justice and Lord Chancellor reached a view on this case in March 2009, following a preliminary investigation by a circuit judge. Mr. Forrest was made aware of their decision at that time. In the light of further representations from Mr. Forrest, the Lord Chief Justice and Lord Chancellor agreed that an independent review body should be established to look into the case. The review body is chaired by a High Court judge and has three other members, a coroner and two lay members. The review body process continues, and Mr. Forrest remains suspended while the investigation continues. It would be inappropriate to comment further at this stage. So, if the Office for Judicial Complaints or Rachel Collins or anyone else do answer any of these questions, I'll let you know. It continues to remain a really extraordinary state of affairs to have your coroner suspended for such a long time with no proper explanation as to why.
Is there anyone standing in for him instead, then?
Yes, there's an assistant coroner or a deputy coroner. And also, Paul Forrest, it has to be said, it was reported at Christmas time, has also had two heart attacks whilst he's been on suspension. And I think, really, the taxpayers of the city deserve an explanation from the Chief Executive and from the Office for Judicial Complaints as to why this process has dragged on such a long time.
You're listening to Dialect Radio.co.uk.
Now, the Lord Chancellor, Kenneth Clarke, has finally sacked last week the Avon coroner, Paul Forrest. But what is a coroner? Journalist Dominic Harris explained it concisely last week in the Western Daily Press. He said, and I quote, "Coroners are senior lawyers or doctors, frequently both, who are in charge of holding formal inquests into people's deaths, where a cause needs to be found. They are one of the most ancient and senior positions in English law, first established more than 800 years ago, shortly after the Norman Conquest, in a bid to deter communities from a continuing habit of killing Normans. A heavy fine was levied on villages where a dead body was discovered on the assumption that it was a Norman, unless it could be proved to be a Saxon or English. The fine was known as the murdrum, from which the word murder is derived." Now, we'll be hearing from Andrew Gregg, Paul Forrest's lawyer, in a moment. But first, Gary, why the Avon coroner? I thought Avon had been abolished.
Well, Avon, as an administrative unit, has, but there was a logic to Avon, even though a lot of people didn't actually love it as an institution, in that it was of a size that, for a service like this, was logical. And, you know, on all sorts of other things, like that's why we work with our surrounding authorities on transport matters, because a lot of the people who travel into Bristol come from those surrounding authorities, and it is sensible to have an administrative unit of that size. So in case of the Avon coroner, the other three authorities actually pay Bristol to run the service.
OK, now, Andrew Gregg from Queen's Square law firm Gregg Latchams is Avon coroner Paul Forrest's lawyer. When I spoke to him earlier this week, he explained what the original complaint against Paul Forrest by Bristol City Council was all about.
I'm Andrew Gregg, senior partner of Gregg Latchams, past president of Bristol Law Society and solicitor representing Paul Forrest, coroner for the County of Avon.
How and why was Paul initially suspended back at the beginning of 2009?
Paul was suspended as a result of a complaint about his conduct and his attitude towards the Bristol City Council and certain other councillors and people in the Bristol City Council. And as a result, an inquiry was ordered to be carried out by the Lord Chancellor's department, and Judge Rhesius carried out that inquiry, gathered evidence, and made a recommendation, which recommended that Mr. Forrest be dismissed from the office of coroner.
And it does sound a bit strange that a complaint should be made about his attitude. Why was his attitude seen to be potentially detrimental?
There were a number of issues involving the independence of the Office of Coroner. The first issue that arose resulted from the wholly inadequate facilities that existed at Backfields, the original coroner's court. As a result, there was a mega row between the coroner and Bristol City Council and the other unitary authorities as to what should happen about Backfields. For example, there were a number of other proposed sites for the coroner's court and mortuary, some of which were politically motivated, like, for example, some councillors wanted it up at Redfield and other places, purely from the point of view of it being politically convenient. So that was the first issue. Paul Forrest found that there was the old magistrate's court at Flaxbourton available. He arranged for a grant to be obtained to cover half the cost of that, and he went ahead and also then arranged for an architect who specialises in mortuaries and coroner's courts, called Mr. Venners, to prepare a feasibility study. That went ahead, and as a result, we now have the excellent and probably state-of-the-art best facilities for a coroner's court and a mortuary in the country.
So, Gary, why the complaint in the first place? It sounds to me like the coroner was just doing his job, trying to find and set up a new coroner's court, because the old one just wasn't adequate.
There had been quite a number of other matters of contention between the coroner and various officials from various places, including obviously officials from the city council. There had been a complaint and a large number of complaints logged, which aren't actually spoken of there, it is the case that the ex-coroner was also sitting as a judge elsewhere. It became an impossible position for the service to be provided efficiently, because yes, we had a wonderful building that was put up, but when the auditors wanted to check what was actually going on, they were denied access to find out what was happening with the money. And also we had a considerable problem, or officers had a considerable problem, with regard to providing the service, because of lack of communication and being able to work with the officials from the city council responsible for providing the service.
Now, in British law, coroners are supposed to be independent of local authorities, and the trouble started where while after Bristol City Council took over the payroll system for the coroner's staff.
The other areas of complaint were, first of all, with regard to the coroner's staff, i.e. who was employing them, because the Bristol City Council purported to, and indeed appear to have, taken over the employment of the coroner's staff, and in particular the coroner's officers and administrators. Now, that involved difficult legislation, the transfer of undertakings legislation, TUPE. The coroner was very keen that the staff, and indeed the staff were keen, that they should remain under his control. They are, after all, his officers and his staff. So that was one big issue, which rumbles on. Who employs the coroner's staff and the coroner's officers?
Now, as I understand it, the coroner should be independent of the city council, and the city council should be paying the coroner's staff. So why did the city council decide that it should also be actually their employers, so with the power to hire and fire and sack those staff?
Indeed, that is correct, and that is what they have done with regard to one of the coroner's officers or staff now, Miss Vivian Edwards. They have, as I understand it, dismissed her. For what reason, I know not. It should not be a matter for the Bristol City Council. Whilst the City Council should obviously be advised as to who is employed, how much they're paid, what their duties are, and so on and so forth, because their primary duty is to fund the employee and to fund the expenses and outgoings for the coroner. The coroner, however, is and should be totally and utterly independent of any interference by the Bristol City Council or indeed any other local authority, and should be able to carry out his duties without constraint and be able to rely on the Bristol City Council and the other authorities to fund his coronial services.
Now, Gary, do you agree with this whole principle that the coroner should be independent?
I think in every system where there are people who are there to serve the public, there have to be checks and balances. In actual fact, the control here actually was central, and investigations were actually carried out by the Office of Judicial Complaint. They actually looked into this. They appointed a Crown Court judge who investigated the matter and gave a very clear view of where fault actually lay. And following that, there was a 5-day hearing with four specific experts involved, including specialists in HR law and again a judge. And this panel then actually produced a very clear report as to where they thought that fault actually lay. And in actual fact, therefore, said that the coroner should be dismissed. So that is not a decision of the Bristol City Council. That's a decision on people appointed by the Office of Judicial Complaint. He was also removed, as I understand it, as a judge from immigration, as an immigration judge at the same time. There were comments made as to his behaviour, which I think resulted in the dismissal.
Now, I asked Andrew Gregg, who's Paul Forrest's solicitor, whether it really matters whether the coroner is controlled or paid by the Bristol City Council or not. Now, why is it, do you think, that the Office of Coroner has been historically independent of the City Council, and the Council are supposed to pay the wages of the coroner and his staff, but he himself has independence? Why is that?
Well, the reason is simply this. You need to look right back at the history of the coroner's service. And the duty of the coroner, when carrying out his job, is to establish who the deceased was, where they died, when they died, and the cause of death, and to come up with answers to those basic questions. If you have anyone interfering in that function, and it could be the City Council, it could be a court, it could be anyone else, then you will not arrive at, possibly, a true verdict as to why that somebody died, where they died, and how they died, and what the cause of death was. The coroner needs to be totally and wholly independent.
Do you think that what's happened in this case does bring into question the independence of the coroner's service in the city?
I think it does. I think there's a great danger that it does. And if the City Council are allowed to interfere with the coronial duties, I think it could be a very, very serious inroad into the vital independence of a coroner.
Surely it's not going to go to the extent of actually affecting verdicts.
Well, it could do if, for example, the Bristol City Council were to control the coroner's officers, either financially by their salaries or by issuing directions and saying, well, you're employed by us, therefore you will do this, this and this, and if you fail to do so, you'll be in breach of your duty, etc., etc., then there is influence being put upon the coroner's staff, whose duty it is to investigate matters under the instruction of the coroner.
Now, this investigation was undertaken by something called the Office for Judicial Complaints. Can you tell us who they are and who actually conducted the review?
What happened is, following the finding of Judge Rhesius, that finding was challenged by the coroner by way of what's known as a judicial review. That's to say, an application to the administrative court to review the findings of the judge who carried out that original inquiry. What then happened is that the administrative court suggested, and indeed offered, that the Office of Judicial Complaints should look into the matter as a preliminary sort of issue and decide whether Judge Rhesius's findings were correct and to be upheld as a precursor to a full judicial review. What then happened is they referred the matter to the Office of Judicial Complaints, which set up a tribunal to look into it and heard evidence. They have then come up with their findings, which basically supported those of Judge Resius. The only problem is that they failed, when coming up with their findings, to comply with the rules and regulations and give the coroner and his legal advisers the right and the ability to question what findings they came up with. And that's a matter with which I am in correspondence. And basically I've said to them, why have you ignored these rules?
Now, Gary, what he's saying there is that actually making this announcement, the coroner has been dismissed, that Kenneth Clark and the Office of Judicial Complaints are actually circumscribing their own rules. Is that just sour grapes, or do you think that there's some strength to that argument?
I'm not a lawyer and therefore not qualified to answer that. All I can say is that the decision was taken by the government and Ken Clark after a High Court judge has actually looked at the matter and a tribunal from the Office of Judicial Complaint. It is not up to me to second guess what they've actually done.
Well, I did ask him. I said, but what is it that you're complaining about here? The most contentious part of the latest decision is whether or not the Lord Chancellor and the Office of Judicial Complaints have actually followed their own rules. And this is what Andrew Gregg, solicitor for Paul Forrest, the ex-coroner of Avon, had to say.
Well, why on earth should they be ignoring their own rules?
Very good question. Would you like to put that to them? And would you also ask them, please, to respond to my questions as to why they have done so? I wish they would abide by the rules.
Now, they've also failed to respond to my questions as well. As this is a sensitive office, the Office for Judicial Complaints, do you think that there really needs to be a little bit more public accountability with decisions being very, very clear who has made decisions, how, and exactly what they've based those decisions on?
That's exactly what the rules and regulations say, in that when they publish a decision, they are supposed to abide by a timetable and enable people to comment on it.
And have they not done that in this case?
No, they haven't. And that is something with which I am deeply concerned as to why they haven't done it. The regulations are the judicial discipline, brackets prescribed procedures, regulations of 2006, and it first of all requires a review body to send a copy of the final report to Mr. Forrest. Well, I say they haven't done that. Eventually I received it. Secondly, it requires the Lord Chancellor and Lord Chief Justice, after considering the report, to set out the proposed action, i.e. to set it out. They haven't done that. Regulation 27.1, they should notify Mr. Forrest of the proposal and invite him to make representations. They haven't done that. Regulation 27.2, Mr. Forrest or the coroner should make any representations within 20 business days. Well, when he hasn't received the proposal, we're still waiting to do that. Finally, under Regulation 27.3, only after considering such representations can the Lord Chancellor and the Lord Chief Justice make a decision. Now, it seems to me that they have made a decision with a total disregard to the regulations, and the coroner should seriously consider judicial review proceedings against them now.
Anyway, the coroner has vowed to fight on, apparently to clear his name, and is challenging the Office for Judicial Complaints ruling as unlawful. So this may not be the last we hear of this. Now, one of the most controversial stories we've covered over the last 6 months or so is the sacking of Avon coroner Paul Forrest for, amongst other things, speaking up about the state of the coroner's service. The office of coroner goes back nearly 1,000 years, and he investigates, or she investigates, all suspicious deaths, including those where the council may have been negligent. Now, Barbara, do you believe the coroner should have freedom of speech, total freedom of speech?
Well, I don't think this is a question of free speech. As I understand it, there have been some, quite serious situations over the last few years, and the coroner is appointed, I think, by the Lord Chancellor. I have to say, others in that position, I think, would have... there would have been sanctions, there would have been some way of calling that person to account and doing something about it at a much earlier stage. This has been going on a very long time, and I think Bristol needs to have the new coroner in place, and I very much hope that it will be resolved as quickly as possible.
Now, we have a listen now to former Master of Bristol Law Society and Paul Forrest, the former coroner's lawyer now, Andrew Gregg, from legal firm Gregg Latchams. Now, do you think that the role that the City Council seem to have taken as employers of the coroner's staff could compromise the independence of the coroner?
Yes, I do. I'm in no doubt about that. When you've got interference from a local authority, all right, they're the paymasters, but they have no right to interfere with the function of the coroner or the function of the coroner's staff.
Now, it took something like nearly 18 months for the investigation into the complaints against Paul Forrest for him to be finally sacked by the Lord Chancellor. Why do you think this process took so long?
First of all, it was very complex legal arguments. The whole issue of the independence of the coroner, the constitution, and all the other matters that relate to it resulted in it taking a very, very long time. And I'm afraid it was further complicated by what I regard as personal attacks on the coroner himself. The other problems that the coroner has faced, I mean, having got this wonderful mortuary and the court up and running, and I should say that before that, bodies were stacking up at enormous costs in deep freezes at Southmead Hospital and places like that. But having got it all, we now have, as I say, the best facility, certainly in the southwest, I think in the country. But in so doing, he has offended those in the Bristol City Council that hold the purse strings, and they have made the complaints against him.
Now, Barbara, do you think you've really, as a city council, entered into the spirit of this when actually the coroner is supposed to be totally independent?
Well, the coroner is paid out of the public purse and as such should be accountable. And it seems to me to be entirely unsatisfactory the way this has been handled. And I think if they're not satisfied for the City Council to call the coroner to account, then we need another authority that has the power to look into what we believe to have been, you know, poor practice and extreme difficulties of operation. And I think, you know, that we would very much have accepted that, but the amount of money that this has cost the public is quite phenomenal, and I think that we all in public office have to be accountable. We have to be able to be sure that the public has been well served, and there needs to be some form of authority that exercises that accountability, and I believe it's missing at the moment. It isn't a question of free speech, not at all, but it's a question of whether you believe the person is actually carrying out their office as they should be, and if there is any question of it, there should be a possibility of doing something about it long before the time that this has taken.